From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Forever Unbridled. Abel Tasman charging, but running out of time. Forever Unbridled's going to do it. Forever Unbridled has won the Breeders' Cup Distaff. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Shaman Ghost is trying to get into second, then Neolithic, back forth is Noble Bird, followed by Keen Ice. But what a race! What a sport! What a horse! Arrogate romps in the Pegasus! He won it by 3.5.
They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Solo Mini, and Bolduro will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you with us, tuning in throughout North America, Sirius 219, XM 206, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and of course, all of you listening to us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Welcome to the program. Going to be a very busy couple of hours this morning as we talk about some of the Kentucky Derby prep races coming up later this afternoon. You have the Rebel at Oaklawn Park, and you have the newly named Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway, formerly the Spiral, the Jim Beam, and I believe there were a couple of other names sprinkled in there over the years too, but Jeff Ruby Stakes, now the title sponsor of that race. Of course, that will be contested on the synthetic. The main track is where they will contest the Rebel at Oaklawn Park. And then after this, we really start to ramp it up with the Louisiana Derby next weekend. You have the Sunland Derby as well. And we start edging closer to the Florida Derby coming up on March 31st. And then opening weekend at Keeneland, you have the Bluegrass Stakes, the Wood Memorial, Santa Anita Derby, all kinds of Derby action coming your way. And JT, it makes sense because we are just 50 days, 9 hours, 31 minutes, and 17 seconds away.
Yeah, it gets closer and closer. It's amazing how that works.
Edging ever closer.
Time just keeps ticking away as we wait for the Kentucky Derby. Speaking of the Jeff Ruby Stakes, they spell that S-T-E-A-K-S.
Right.
Right? So this was one of the most clever tweets. A guy named Ryan Thompson, who's at Ryan from Chicago, said, so if there was a coupled entry into the Jeff Ruby Stakes, would it be one and A1?
Ooh, that's actually clever.
I thought that was very clever.
Yeah, that's clever. Yeah. They should do that.
well, they should
run a coupled entry.
Just to have the A1,
just,
right?
Just to have it in there.
Sponsored by A1 Sauce.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, looking at the two races, and it would make sense considering the fact that the race at Turfway is contested on a synthetic surface and the other one is contested on a conventional dirt surface at Oaklawn. I think the Oaklawn
dirt.
Race...
Dirt. It's called dirt.
Yes. I think it is so much stronger. Don't you? I think the Rebel is so much stronger than the race up at Turfway.
Oh, yeah.
You agree?
I agree.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's necessarily news. Solomini's in the Rebel.
Which it almost guarantees that the winner of the Kentucky Derby is coming from the race at Turfway. Now that I said that.
Or even the Rushaway. In the Rushaway, there's some Kentucky Derby nominees. So even though that's not a points race, they still could come out of there. It's interesting to me, maybe I'm the only one that really gives a blankety blank, but the two horses that I liked in the Jeff Ruby Stakes, neither one of them are nominated to the Triple Crown. So that's kind of bizarre.
Wow.
But we'll see what happens. It's going to be a great day at Turfway. A lot of good racing.
Yeah, this
very
is
very interesting card.
Signature day, and it is a really good day of racing there, and a great day of racing at Oaklawn, and you know all over the country. I mean, we're looking at that road to the Derby heating up. We're looking at major stakes races for other divisions too, including the Grade 2 Inside Information Stakes at Gulfstream, which we're going to have coverage of later this afternoon on the network as part of our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series. The queen in that division, Forever Unbridled, is heading to Dubai, and she's going to take on the boys in the Dubai World Cup. But you're left with some really, really good fillies and mares in that Inside Information Stakes.
Yeah, that's a good race. And, you know, Gulfstream's been putting on some fantastic stakes this meeting. So not surprising to see a solid field there. You know, arguably some of the best fillies in the country in that race. So, you know, we've got the Inside Information. We got the Derby preps at Turfway and Oaklawn. There's other good stakes races at Oaklawn as well. So there's
a lot of things.
Laurel has an excellent card. You know, they've got five stakes races with $450,000 in purses. So there's a Derby prep race there too.
Yeah, the Private Terms, which goes as race number 10, right around 5:40 Eastern. We're going to be joined after our first commercial break this morning by Sal Sinatra from the Maryland Jockey Club. Sal will talk to us about that big day at Laurel. He'll spend some time looking ahead to that third Saturday in May and the Preakness Stakes at Pimlico. We'll also get an update as to what the future plans may be for the Preakness. A lot of people thinking that it might be moving to Laurel. That has been discussed from time to time. We'll get an update from Sal as to whether that's still in the works, if they're still planning on heading that direction. But I'm looking forward to Pimlico. It should be a great day in Baltimore.
Oh, absolutely. Preakness is always a lot of fun, and it's a very festive atmosphere there. Everybody that listens to this program knows that it's my favorite Triple Crown event, and I highly recommend, if you want to go to a Triple Crown event, you seriously consider the Preakness, especially in light of the fact that it may not be run at Pimlico in the near future.
Yeah.
We'll have to see what Sal says about that, but you know, it's a huge event, and yes, Pimlico's old and dilapidated like me, but you know, there's still some charm there.
Well, Sal is going to be followed this morning by Jen Shaw, who is with Dean Dorton. She's one of the lead accountants at Dean Dorton, and Jen is going to fill us in on everything that you can expect with the new tax codes and how they may benefit you if you're in the horse business. So make sure you stay tuned for that. She has been on top of this for a while and looking forward to that visit. Some things to maybe put some money back in your pocket this year and moving forward. At 9 o'clock Eastern, we're going to kick off the second half of the program with Hall of Fame jockey Pat Day, who has won the race at Turfway, which is now the Jeff Ruby Stakes. He has won that race a record five times, including with Little E.T., who would go on and win the Kentucky Derby, providing Pat with his only victory in the Derby, which in itself is surprising. But we'll get a chance to visit with Pat coming up 9 o'clock Eastern. Should be a fun visit with the Hall of Famer. Mike Nyman from Gulfstream will be with us in his customary position at 9:25 Eastern. And then coming up at 9:40 Eastern, no doubt a emotional segment with Al Stahl Jr. as he looks back on the life of owner Tom Benson, not only a prominent racehorse owner, but also the owner of the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans. Tom passing away on Thursday, and we'll get a chance to talk to Al and look back on the life of Tom Benson, and who better to do it than Al Stahl Jr.?
Yeah, I know. Al's a great guy, and he was close to the Bensons and trains for them, and so it was kind of surprising because there was an article earlier this week that said Mr. Benson had kind of turned the corner and was on the improve, but the flu got the best of him.
Yeah, 90 years old and passing away on Thursday. So Al will join us toward the end of the program to look back on that life and his marvelous career and everything that he has meant, not only to the racing industry, but to New Orleans and just as a human being, just a wonderful person. And we'll do that coming up toward the end of the show. We're going to get to our first commercial break. We'll come back. We're going to kick it off with Sal Sinatra from Maryland Jockey Club. He's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is all presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Tom's Ready, a multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by Sire of Sires More Than Ready. As a three-year-old, Tom's Ready scored in the prestigious Grade 2 Woody Stevens Stakes at Belmont and defeated champion Run Happy in the Grade 3 ACAC at Churchill Downs before winning the Grade 3 Bold Ruler at 4, earning a 107 buyer, the co-fastest buyer at 7 furlongs in 2017. Tom's Ready, new for 2018 at Spendthrift Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-588. 5480.
Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interest and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Still having fun, comes off the inside and fourth, has four or five to make up with a quarter of a mile to go, and they straighten in. Oh, Time Revival tries to kick away. Wentz on the outside, set down for full attack, still having fun near the inside, quickens up as well. He Hate Me is in fourth, and it's Old Time Revival holding on. Still having fun on the inside, very willing on the left lead. Wentz out in the center of the track with a furlong left to go, and it's Old Time Revival, still having fun. Wentz on the outside, reaching for the line, still having fun, still having fun. Got up, I believe. Still having fun from Old Time Revival and Wentz at the second wire finish.
Our man Dave Rodman with the call of the Miraclewood Stakes. Still having fun. Picking up the victory that afternoon, we'll see Still Having Fun back in action later today when he goes postward in the $100,000 private terms. That is at Laurel. It will be race number 10. Right around 5:40 Eastern time, and in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Sal Sinatra from the Maryland Jockey Club, and we'll get a chance to talk to him about that exciting day of racing at Laurel Park. And while we wait on Sal, a good chance to remind you that Looking at Lucky landed his first well overdue Northern Hemisphere Grade 1 winner on Saturday when Accelerate stormed home by 5.5 lengths to win the Santa Anita Handicap for owners Ronis Racing and trainer John Sadler. Standing at Coolmore America, Looking at Lucky has already sired four Grade 1 winners in the Southern Hemisphere and multiple Grade 1 placed, including top-level performers Looking at Lee and Money Multiplier, a five-time Grade 1 winner himself, and champion two-year-old to boot. Looking at Lucky represents incredible value, so call the team at Ashford to get in before it's too late. Looking at Lucky.
He was a good horse.
really good. So make sure you call those guys and take advantage of that. We are efforting Sal Sinatra at this time, and we'll see if we can get him on the line to talk about all the big racing at Laurel. Jude, you mentioned at the top of the show, five stakes races on the program today. The private terms will be the race for the three-year-olds, the Derby prep, and it will be the, I guess, the featured event, if you want to look at it like that, because it's going to be run as race number 10. It's the final stakes on the program. What do you think? A pretty wide-open race, and some decent horses in here.
Absolutely. There's six Triple Crown nominees, probably led by Still Having Fun, who's a very talented horse by Old Fashioned. He's run four times, three victories, and second, beaten only in neck. So, you know, he hasn't gone two turns yet. This will be his first race around two turns, but he's really progressed nicely. He's gone from an 83 Brisnet speed figure to a 95 in his four starts. He last raced February 17th, my birthday, and won the Miracle Wood Stakes, as we listened to. So he's a formidable foe and looks like he has a chance on the Derby trail.
Yeah, nobody better to talk about that racing at Laurel than Maryland Jockey Club President Sal Sinatra, who is with us now on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sal, welcome, my friend. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys today?
Oh, everything is great. We're excited. Five stakes races and what, more than $450,000 in purses?
Yeah, it's a big day. We've got a pretty deep bunch of horses running, a couple of three-year-old races. Really interesting.
Yeah, you got the Beyond the Wire for the fillies, the Oaks fillies, and then the private terms for those on the Triple Crown trail. A lot of Triple Crown nominees in that race.
Yeah, it's been a formidable race. I mean, it kind of sets up nice for the Tessio, which we use as a win, and you're in for the Preakness, next month. And, we got a little bit of interest here with Tim Keefe's horse, having, the horse run really well up at New York last week in the Gotham.
Yeah, that's true, too. A lot of angles, a lot of things to be excited about when it comes to Maryland racing. Sal, let's start by looking back at what we've seen over the past several weeks at Laurel. It's been a really strong meet for you guys.
It's been strong. We've been fortunate. Everybody north of us has been getting the snow. We still have the cold weather. But, it's been a fairly decent winter. We're still waiting for spring. Can't wait to get on the turf. But we're plodding along okay.
Well, there's been so many solid weekends with nice stakes. You guys are giving away a lot of money.
Well, we tried to go through that whole thing of just bundling the stakes. Maryland for years was traditional, I try to have a feature or two every weekend, and they just kind of get hidden over time. We just found if we group them together like set this card here, you get a little more participation from out of state, especially in New York, the horsemen and the riders.
So where do things stand with Maryland racing right now? We've talked about this the past couple of years. It seems as if there's a revitalization going on with the industry in the state.
Yeah, it's been a real good feel. Ever since I've gotten here, it's just trying to get the horsemen, breeders, the tracks, everybody on the same page, which I think we are on now. And as we keep opening these OTBs, increasing race days and opportunities, a lot of heritage here in Maryland. And I think it sparked a lot of the breeders and stuff. I mean, we've been lucky to fall crops been up every year, the mare's bred and everything else. And it's just a real, real good feeling right now. And the legislature's taking a lot of credit for it, as they should. We're one of the last states to get the slots in the Mid-Atlantic. And, I'm really happy that the guys in this state, both the breeders and the horsemen, hung in there. And now at least they're reaping some rewards.
As we talk to trainers and owners from Maryland, they're so excited and they're so loyal to the state. A lot of them stayed there through the rough times, and now they're reaping the rewards of the changes that have been made, and it's just the enthusiasm is really cool, I think.
It is cool. I mean, we have that going on. We have, obviously a lot of renovations going on here at Laurel. There's talk about what we're doing with Pimlico. We put our bid in for the Breeders' Cup. The legislature is trying to enact a bill to help me resurrect the DC International. I mean, it's from every angle right here in the state. It's a really, really good feeling.
Sal, I'm glad you bring those two things up. Where do things stand with both Pimlico and then the DC International?
Well, Pimlico, we just had the kickoff meeting with the Stadium Authority for Phase 2. They're laying out their outline for their report, which they're hoping to get finished by the end of the year. And, you know, it's great the city and the mayor jumped on board because regardless of what kind of arena we wind up building there, it needs to be used for more than, you know, 40 or 50 days we may run Pimlico. So, you know, there's a lot of investment to make it a world-class facility, and you just got to find out the uses the rest of the year for the place. As far as the D.C. International, actually the lottery, Maryland Lottery, was going to give us money to resurrect it. And when they wrote the bill a couple of years back, they made it contingent on being a grade one. And I don't think they really understood how we do graded races in our sport. So I basically testified if I can make it a graded race, I'd kick it off the ground this year. And we're talking hypothetically within the Stronach group trying to make that race into a turf version of the Pegasus.
Well, that would probably go a long ways to making it a grade one, huh?
Yeah, quickly.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, one of the angles Tim and I have spoken about is, you know, maybe petitioning the embassies to try and get each country or each racing jurisdiction to put up a stake to get in the gate and have, you know, one horse from each country, almost like an Olympic race, and try and run it, you know, where it be, you know, 6-8 weeks, whatever, from Breeders' Cup and be try and get it to be a win and you're in, and, you know, kind of make it, you know, kind of bring a world horse here for the Breeders' Cup.
Wow, how neat would that be? How far away do you think you are from making that a reality, Sal?
I testified last week on the bill. I think it will pass, which means this September I will probably run. It won't be called the DC International. It will be called the Maryland International. I think it will just be a graded stake. I may run some incentives for group winners in the race to enhance the purse. But we're still talking about trying to figure out how to do the, you know, pay per stall and the gate and all that stuff. But, yeah, I'm excited to bring the race back because ever since I've gone here, that's all the fans here at Laurel miss is the D.C. International. So we're just trying to figure a way to bring it back.
You might be able to get Kim Ramsey to buy a stall in the gate for Barbados.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Sure, why not?
He would be game for that. Plus, now he's opening a division in Canada. He loves the international racing. You should talk to him.
Oh, definitely. I'm certainly going to need help. And, you know, like I said, the embassies are here. And this throw a great party for all, you know, all the different countries of the world and try and get a few horses here. And if we can guarantee that you're only running against one American or one English horse, it may, you know, entice smaller countries to participate.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Just, what an amazing concept that would be, Sal, if you guys can pull this all together. And, you know, that's one thing. By the way, we're talking with Sal Sinatra, president of the Maryland Jockey Club. When you think about the Stronach Group and everything that they've done for racing, you know, at Gulfstream, Santa Anita, and other places, and now doing it in Maryland, what's it like for you to be part of an organization that cares so much about the sport?
It's great. It's just constantly on the phone, constantly on conference calls, and everybody's got wild ideas, you know. And it's good we have a nice team to bounce ideas off of, crazy as some of them may be. You know, with we have a lot of racing knowledge within the company right now, and I think that sparks a lot of this excitement and this work to try and make things better.
Well, Frank Stronach never wanted to shy away from a crazy idea, and I know a lot of times when he starts to implement these ideas that people do think he's crazy. And all of a sudden, the vision comes together, and races like the Pegasus World Cup become a reality. Gulfstream Park and the new vision he had for Gulfstream Park becomes a reality, and all of a sudden, people are saying, you know what? This isn't half bad.
No, and everybody's copying it. I mean, here at Laurel, we got, you know, long-term plans here. Obviously, we're starting to develop the land around us with some housing and retail. We got the train going to stop here. It'll be a bigger grandstand version of Gulfstream at some point. But that's your fan base. That's, you know, you can come to a site and do more than just bet the races.
Sal Sinatra with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here this morning. Sal, you mentioned the Preakness Stakes in Pimlico. There was some talk a while back, I think you and I discussed it on this program, of the race shifting to Laurel at some point. Is that still in the works, or are we going to keep it at Pimlico?
For now, it's at Pimlico. I mean, until the study comes out and finds out the true dollar amount to make it a world-class facility, I think that'll be the you know, what'll spark which way it falls. You know, the original phase one was a facelift of the place, which I don't think anybody's really happy with, and that was $300 million. I think the city and the Stronach Group, you know, think that the Preakness should be in a world-class venue, and world-class venue with infrastructure and everything else is going to be a higher ticket item.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition during the Triple Crown, with Churchill Downs and their refurbishment and Belmont Park, so that, you guys are kind of stuck in the middle. But there is a certain charm to Pimlico, and it would be a shame to lose that as a site with all the history there.
Oh, 100%. You feel it every year when you go up there. And, they call it the People's Party, and it certainly is. And I think even the horse people that come in feel more relaxed coming to Baltimore because it's just a good time, and you feel that history.
Yeah, you certainly do. Lots of great racing coming up at Laurel and then leading into that meet at Pimlico for the Preakness Stakes, which, of course, will be there as your exclusive radio home for the Preakness right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Join us on that Saturday, third Saturday in May, Sal, is always a big time in Baltimore, a big party.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we were at our big meeting yesterday just trying to plan it out. There's going to be some changes to the infield. Stronic Group's trying to do some things, and we ran out of time this year, so we're going to do some noticeable stuff, but I think it's more for next year's Preakness. We're really trying to make this a well-rounded entertainment event, and Belinda's team is really high on that. We're going to one stage. We hired a Corso group that was Coachella, and we're going to try and make that infield less of a mosh pit and more of an entertainment experience.
Less of a mosh pit. What about running across the tops of the urinals, the porta potties?
Yeah, we're going to separate them so you can.
You guys tried that one year, and I saw somebody try to jump the gap in between them as you had them separated, and they came up a little bit short.
It's a lot safer at Cheltenham, I can tell you that much.
Well, Sal, again, big racing still ahead at Laurel. You have another, month or so left in the meet. You mentioned the Federico Testio coming up on April 21st, which will be a win and you're in for the Preakness Stakes. Fill people in on what they can look forward to over the next month.
Well, we're hoping the turf horse starts up. I know George Ann's written it in the book for April, and that's what we're really proud of. But, we're rooting for these local horses to move forward. Like I said, you got Tim Keefe's horses. It could be any kind of horse for a Triple Crown right now. The filly of Stallsman's running into Beyond the Wire is a really talented filly as soon as she gets her head squared on. She's going to be a tough one to make, So for us, we may actually have some local flavor, headed towards the Preakness. Also, the bill for the DC International also gives a bonus for Maryland Bred or Maryland Sired in the Preakness, which still having fun is. So I'd like to give that money away at some point.
Well, things are moving in the right direction in large part because of Sal Sinatra and his entire team with the Stronach Group and the Maryland Jockey Club. Sal, as always, really do appreciate the visit. Like all of our guests, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. And, of course, you can embrace your passion and wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Appreciate it, my friend.
So
and, keep it rolling.
We will. We will. Look forward to seeing you guys.
All right. We'll see you soon. Sal Sinatra with us here on the Equine Forum. And, they have things moving in the right direction. And I know it's a team effort. We talked to Cricket Goodall, who is the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. And she says the same thing. She said it's really a team effort, and Cricket and her team have a lot to do with it. Sal and his team with the Stronach Group have a lot to do with it, and together, everybody's on the same page in Maryland.
Yeah, well, they have the backing of the horsemen, too, and the horsemen are very excited. You talk to owners and trainers, and everybody's happy that they're racing in Maryland. And I'm kind of like the voice of Maryland Racing for their ad campaign. And I do those ads every week and I go, man, this is great. Every week it's not every week, but probably like every other week, there's a day with four or five stakes and the purses are always good. It's usually close to $500,000 they're giving away. And that means a lot to local people, to have 100 granders and some graded races along the way. And, they get to see some of the, what you might call fancier trainers like Todd Pletcher and Graham Motion shipping horses in because there's purses, because there's several opportunities on the same day. It's a lot nicer to ship in two or three horses for a stakes than just shipping one. And so, you know, it's a great opportunity for everybody. It forces the horses up the ladder a little bit and makes everybody want to be more competitive. It's really a good situation in Maryland right now.
Well, don't forget, you can follow the Horse Racing Radio Network down the road to the Kentucky Derby and throughout the entire Triple Crown with our exclusive race coverage. Head over to horseracingradio.net to check out a complete broadcast schedule, and be sure to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. It is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When we come back, we'll visit with Jen Shaw. She is one of the lead accountants with Dean Dorton, and she'll tell you about the ways you may be able to benefit from the new tax codes. That's up next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
On June 9, 1956, the field went postward for the running of the $50,000 Argonaut Handicap at Hollywood Park. In the field were Langoland Farms' Porterhouse, who had whipped his chief rival in this field, Swaps, by a head in the last previous meeting of the two in the Californian, the very speedy Bobby Brocato with the master craftsman Johnny Longdon in the irons, and, of course, Swaps, who had come off an injury as a three-year-old to make an attempt at a third world record. Swaps had already notched world records for 1/116 miles and 1 mile and 70 yards. The Hollywood Park had been especially groomed to be as fast as a one-arm paper hanger in a four-room apartment with a two-hour deadline. The anticipation was high amongst the patrons on this day for the import of a possible record-breaking performance. Trainer Mish Tenney said flatly and openly that his horse, Swaps, would lower Citation's world mark of 1:33.3 for the flat mile, a record that had stood since 1949. As the horses broke from the starting gate, it was expected that the very speedy Bobby Brocato with Longdon in the saddle would go to the front to try to steal it. But Bill Shoemaker got Swaps out of the box like a rocket down along the fence, and he was not about to allow himself to get shut off by the speed horses outside of him going into the turn. Swaps established a clear lead going into the clubhouse turn. Shoemaker realized Longdon was resigned to playing the waiting game, settling in just off the pace with Bobby Brocato. Schumacher turned that strategy to his own advantage while keeping lots of horse in reserve, setting the early fractions. Swaps had an open lead all the way down the backside while turning in a 22 3/4, 45 1 for the half, and 108 2 for the first six panels. As the field swung through the far turn in the glistening California sunlight, Longdon made his expected move with Bobby Brocato, and with a quick burst of speed got his mount set up to Shoemaker's boot on the leader. The shoe went to the stick, cracking the flank of Swaps with a hard lick, and Swaps responded to again move clear. The Rex Ellsworth-owned four-year-old held sway during the run down the lane, and all eyes were now on the teletimer, which flashed 1:33.1 as he hit the wire, a new world record. Bobby Brocato had been beaten by barely a length in a supremely game effort, and Porterhouse, in receipt of 9 pounds from Swaps, was 6 lengths further back in third. Swaps had clocked the last half mile in a most impressive 48 flat. It was a third world record he had chalked up, and he was, in no uncertain terms, to be regarded as one of the all-time greats on the racetrack. He was blessed with class, courage, and a tremendous amount of ability, a sure-fire recipe for greatness. You know, not all fast horses are great, but all great horses are fast, and Swaps was undeniably fast indeed. Many observers on the scene at Hollywood Park on that June day in 1956 felt Swaps could have gone faster if he'd been pushed in the early part of the race, but it was breathtakingly fast as it was. June 9, 1956, at Hollywood Park, in the Argonaut Handicap, the day Swaps set his third world mark.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus Store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus Store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Ed, get in here and shut the door.
What's up, boss?
What's up? You have to ask, Ed?
Yes, sir, usually, sir.
Ed, you're naked as a jaybird.
Correctamundo, sir, just as you ordered.
I what?
You told us Jimmy John's was going all natural, sir.
No, Ed, I told you our meats are now all natural.
Huh?
That's meats, Ed, not employees.
Oh, I get it now. It's our meats that are all natural.
Yes, Ed. Wood smoked ham, choice roast beef, real fresh turkey breast, all natural and freaky fresh.
How embarrassing.
No kidding. It's a good thing I got to you before your first delivery.
Well, I already spread the word, sir, and...
Naked?
Oh, no.
He's what? Naked?
Naked.
He's naked.
Order Jimmy John's sandwich delivery today. Jimmy John's, where fresh and fast meet.
Today, the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park will feature Oaks Fillies squaring off in the Beyond the Wire Stakes and Kentucky Derby and Preakness hopefuls competing in the Private Term Stakes, with three other stakes on the card and total purses of $450,000 on the line. With Rainbow Six, Pick Five, Pick Four, and Super High Five wagering all available, somebody's going to make a big score. Today is St. Patrick's Day at Laurel Park. Let's get lucky.
Adina Spring Stallion, Point of Entry.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by four lengths.
A five-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy.
Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
And they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a five-race winning streak.
Point of Entry hails from a remarkable female family, with his first four dams Grade 1 winners and or producers. Now with winners in six countries on all surfaces from 5.5 to 10 furlongs, including the sensational undefeated Greatest Stakes winner, Analyze It, widely regarded as the best turf horse in his crop. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
The leader is Dearest. The favorite has a fight on her hands, though, as Paco turns up the pressure with True Romance. And up on the outside, Bodacious Babe, three wide and on a move. Two lengths back to Rich Mommy, then Stella Performance. Wide is Pretty Perfection, and they're at the top of the stretch. The whip is out on Dearest. On the outside, here comes Rich Mommy over the top with True Romance and Bodacious Babe. Late run for More Than a Party with less than an eighth of a mile to go. It's the local horse. It's Rich Mommy for Victor Barboza Jr., who strides to a clear lead. And Rich Mommy will win it for Winds of Change Racing and Luis Saez from Bodacious Babe second, More Than a Party third, photo for fourth between Pretty Perfection and Dearest and Stella Performance in 110 and 2.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. That was Pete Aiello with the call of the Sugar Swirl Stakes and a victory by Rich Mommy. Rich Mommy going to go in the inside information later this afternoon. We'll have that coverage for you exclusively on the network beginning 5 o'clock Eastern time as part of our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series. And JT, I figured no better way to introduce our next guest, Jen Shaw, with Dean Dorton and talk about the new tax codes than with a horse by the name of Rich Mommy, because maybe she'll give you some information that can turn you into a rich mommy or a rich daddy. What do you think?
I think that's a reach.
Jen, I don't know. I was looking for an intro for you, but that's about all I can do this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
Everything is great. How are you?
Well, thanks.
Of course, Jen with Dean Dorton, and they do a tremendous job with all your tax services. Jen, those new tax codes, people that aren't in the business like you are looking at them going, okay, what does it mean? How can I benefit? Are there benefits to me? Fill us in. What's the deal?
Sure. So I will say that, first of all, most of the federal tax reform is not effective until 2018. But there are a few key provisions that do apply for at least a portion of 2017. And those in the horse business can certainly benefit from some of those provisions. And I'll also mention this is only applicable for federal purposes only. So all the states have not decided whether or not they'll adopt these provisions. But I think with any tax law, there's some very positives and there's some, you know, some not so positives. And so, again, I just thought it would be best to focus on what's important for 2017. And the big news there is the what's called bonus depreciation. And that's just a fancy term for when do I get to deduct the cost of my horse that I purchase in my business or the assets that I purchase. And through September 27th of 2017, we have 50% bonus depreciation available for new assets. So what that means is if I purchase a yearling, I can write off up to 62.5% in year one of that yearling's cost. And because that's treated as a new asset. Beginning after September 27th, 2017, so this is applicable for part of 2017, that bonus depreciation of 50% increases to 100%, and then the definition is expanded to include not only new assets, but new-to-me assets. So as long as I've not owned the horse before or the asset before that I'm purchasing, I can deduct up to 100% of the cost.
So that would be a horse bought at the October sale, for instance, is 100%?
Correct, yes. So so the October sales, Phasig, Keeneland November, and then Barrett's fall sales would all qualify as long as the horse was purchased after September 27th of 2017. And this is a big deal because previously breeding stock was not eligible to be fully expensed under bonus depreciation. So this really expands the definition and makes this much more available for horse owners.
Yeah, no, it's huge news, and people should definitely take advantage of that. And Jen, something like this, a development in the tax laws of this type of magnitude, can that actually fuel more interest in people buying horses at auction?
It can if it's known beforehand. So in 2017, the law was actually not passed until December the 20th or 21st. And so we really didn't see an increase in activity at the sales auctions because it was really in limbo at that time. But I do know everyone that I've talked to in the industry and those that are potentially getting into the industry is very excited about the ability to write off 100% of the purchase price of the horse. And that this is applicable through 2022, so we've got some clarity on this for a long time. So, you know, we may see an increase this year when the law is known versus 2017 when it hadn't been passed yet for these sales.
So the January sale, the law was in full effect. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow, wow, yeah, that's big.
It's huge, especially if you need write-offs.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And you can use the nice thing about bonus depreciation, it makes it very valuable for those in the horse business, is that it can be used to create an overall net loss. So I'm not limited to my income generated in my business in order to claim the bonus depreciation.
Jen, I know you said we were going to focus primarily on the benefits pertaining to 2017 and people filing taxes at this point in the season. But looking ahead a little bit, are there other benefits that people can look to take advantage of if they're in the horse business?
Sure. You know, there are a couple of things that begin in 2018. There's a new 20% deduction available for qualifying businesses that are owned by non-corporate people, so mostly individuals. That could be available beginning 2018, and I'm oversimplifying, of course. The 3-year life for yearlings was extended for depreciation purposes in 2017, so that was passed retroactively back to 2017. And then beginning in 2018, gambling losses have always been are deductible to the extent of gambling winnings. But beginning in 2018, these losses will include not only the cost of wagering, but also expenses attributable to gambling activity like travel and lodging.
So that's especially important to people that play like in handicapping tournaments and that Correct. Type of thing. They can deduct it more as a business, which it is for a lot of people that play in, you know, several tournaments all over the country.
Exactly. And the good news for everyone is that tax rates in general are going down. So the corporate tax rate was at 35% through 2017. It's now at 21%. For individuals, the top tax bracket was 39.6. It's now 37%. So a little bit less of a reduction on the individual side. And, you know, there's some provisions and nuances that make everyone's tax situation very different. So what we're finding is that we've looked at this for several family groups, and some see an increase in taxes, and some are seeing a decrease, and it might be a significant decrease or maybe just a minimal decrease. So it really just is a facts and circumstances test, looking at your overall holdings, looking at what you're doing, and also sort of where you're living too, whether you're in a high state tax, or no state or a no tax state.
Jen, how about going back to the handicapper for a minute and the horse player? You mentioned things like travel and lodging being deductible. How about things like your daily racing form or your past performances when you're buying those, or handicapping products you're buying online? Is all of that also tax deductible?
So, yes, as long as you're using it in connection with your gambling activity, and again, this is up to the extent of gambling winnings. So, and this would be for the non-professional handicappers, but it's to the extent that you can tie your activity and your cost to your gambling activity beginning in 2018, that would be deductible up to the extent of gambling winnings.
Well, non-professional handicappers. That rules me out.
You can deduct the price of your hat pin.
Exactly. Visiting with Jen Shaw. She is the Director of Tax Services at Dean Dorton, and what a tremendous job they do. Jen, we were together at Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, and at that point, you were already starting to pore over some of the information in the new tax laws. How much time do you have to spend to refresh, well, to catch yourself up to speed on any changes that come along?
Well, I would say a tremendous amount of time. This is the first time, really, this is the biggest federal tax law change since 1986, and I wasn't practicing quite in 86 yet. So, we actually spent time on the way home from the plane ride home from the Breeders' Cup reading the bills and the commentary from the House and Senate committees. So it was quite fascinating to follow the process and, you know, try to figure out and guess which provisions would ultimately be put in the bill that was signed into law. So it's been a tremendous amount of time, and we've got about 10 to 15 people here that have been concentrating fully on various aspects of this new law. So we've done a bunch of internal training and starting to meet with family groups and with our some key referral sources just to educate and get what we know out there to our clients and to who we work with. But it's there's lots of unknowns and lots of areas of gray that will need to be clarified with this new law.
Why has Dean Dorton made it a point to make sure they integrate themselves with the horse community? They've developed a tremendous relationship over the years. Why is that, Jen?
Well, I mean, there's a number of different reasons, but quite frankly, we have a passion for the industry. We love working with our clients in the industry. It's certainly in our own backyard here in Lexington, and it just it's consistent with the folks we want to work with and just the industry that so many of us enjoy and have a passion for.
Are you a horse racing girl?
I don't know if I'm a horse racing girl. I went, I used to go to Keeneland all the time when I was at UK. I enjoy going to the races. I'm certainly not a handicapper. I do better when I just pick based on color or name or owner. But I certainly enjoy going to the races.
Well, it's a great day out, even if you don't bet. It's a beautiful place to be, Keeneland. But the cool thing about you guys is you've got a kind of a one-stop shop there. If you're in the horse business, you can take care of everybody's needs, not just their horse needs, but the other tax needs that they have.
That's right. We do work with a lot of people. We work with some people and just do their horse, their equine operations, and we work with others where we may start with the equine operations and then expand to the family relationship. So we're flexible.
Yeah, nobody better. Jen Shaw and the team at Dean Dorton, make sure you reach out to them. If you have any tax questions, they are the people to talk with. They will help you out in any way possible. And as you just heard, they make it a point to work with people that are in the horse business. So reach out to them and get in touch. And Jen, how can people do that? The website, I guess, is probably the best way.
Sure. If you go to deandorton.com and you click under publications, I did an article the same day this federal tax law was passed into law. There's a summary article on there, and you can sign up to receive our equine publications.
All right. Well, there you go. deandorton.com, and she is Jen Shaw, and she is with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jen, really do appreciate the visit. Always great to catch up, and let's get together here soon.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, guys.
All right. Jen Shaw. How sharp is she?
Oh, forget about it.
I've moderated a panel for the Owner View Conference a couple of years back, and Jen was on that panel. That's how we were introduced to each other. And I started it off by as I was introducing them, I said, you know, this probably isn't the sexiest topic that we're going to have at the Owner View Conference, because they had an all-star jockey panel and a bunch of other panels and guest speakers that were more high profile, right? Well, she started going on about the tax information, and all of a sudden hands in the audience started raising, right? And people were asking, well, how about this? Can I do this? Because when it comes to people's money, it might not be the sexiest topic, but this is such an important topic.
You can never be too rich or too thin.
Interesting.
That's what they say.
Never too rich or too thin. You can't be too thin, technically.
Well, I guess you could be, but...
Yeah.
But not really.
Right.
So, yeah. Money. My old friend Vince Timpany, who trained Wild again, the first Breeders' Cup Classic winner, he used to say to me, Jude, my boy, money talks, cash screams.
Well, you can have a little more cash in your pocket by contacting Jen Shaw and the team at Dean Dorton. Our thanks to her for the visit this morning. We're going to get to a break. When we come back, we're going to get you set for the second half of the program, and it includes Hall of Fame jockey Pat Day on a St. Patrick's Day edition of the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
power.
And Tapazara, sterling performance today. Tapazara and Corey Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Passion.
And it's American pastime in a very, very impressive effort today.
Performance.
But it's Monomoy Girl and the Rachel Alexandra Stakes. Varonge Rue and Monomoy Girl, 1/3.
Gainesway stallion Tapazara is Tappet's leading miler, breaking his maiden by 10.5 lengths as a 2-year-old, wiring the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by 4.5 lengths at 3, and running away with the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4. A top 10 third crop sire, now with more than $3 million in progeny earnings, including Monomoy Girl, who discovered a new racing style while winning the Grade 2 Rachel Alexandra at the fairgrounds, closing from last to blow by the field in the stretch. Monomoy Girl is now being pointed for Keeneland's Grade 1 Ashland. Tapazara, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Lily T on the outside with Pat Day takes command. Casualizes is second and the others are dropping back. Coming through the stretch and to the wire. Lily T on the outside has the lead by one. Casualizes is second. Lily T wins the Derby by one with Pat Day aboard. Casualizes second. Four back it was Dance Score. Then came Countess de Savoia followed by Pine Bluff. Along the inside, Dr. Devious. Then it was Al Sabine and finally Arazi, who made a bold move around the far turn but didn't have it in the stretch. And the Derby, a slow one. 2 minutes and 4 seconds.
Mike Penn and Jude Feld, Baron and Pontiff, back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That was Dave Johnson with the call of the 1992 running of the Kentucky Derby. Lil E.T., the son of At the Threshold, pulling off the upset that afternoon under Hall of Fame jockey Pat Day. Pat's only victory in the Kentucky Derby. Of course, Lil E.T. had previously won, I believe at that time, Jude, it was known as the Jim Beam Stakes at Turfway Park, if I'm not mistaken. Had won that race at Turfway, went on and took the Kentucky Derby. And until Animal Kingdom came along, he was the only horse to use that route to victory.
Yeah, the Jim Beam, that goes back a ways. That race had a lot of names. I used to wear a Jim Beam jacket almost every day. I actually trained for the lady that owned Jim Beam, Maribel G. Blum, courtesy of Randy Winnick.
Wow.
And so I had this jacket with all the silks of the Jim Beam winners on the back, and I used to wear that every morning at Santa Anita.
Wow, yeah, great stuff, and can't wait to visit with Pat Day coming up in just a few minutes. He'll join us shortly after 9 o'clock Eastern to look back on that moment when he did cross the finish line first beneath those twin spires, and he'll talk about his five victories, a record five victories in the race that is now known as the Jeff Ruby Stakes, taking place this afternoon at Turfway. But Pat won it five times, and I thought it was very interesting that when you go back and you look at his victories in that race, his first win came in 1984. Do you know the name of the horse? I'm putting you on the spot. Probably not.
I have no idea.
The name of the horse was At the Threshold.
Oh.
Right? His final victory in the race came in 1992 with eventual Kentucky Derby winner Lil E.T., who was a son of At the Threshold.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's great.
Yeah, came full circle. So we're going to look forward to visiting with Pat Day about it. And I, you know, as I sent you an email and told you that Pat was going to join us, and I said, hey, it's St. Patrick's Day. So what better way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day on the network than with Pat Day?
Yeah, and if anybody could drive snakes out of Ireland, it would be Pat Day.
Yeah, probably so. You know, you said something not too long ago. I think it was on maybe our Barbados trip or maybe when we were in Florida together. I can't remember what trip it was. But you said that you really came to appreciate Pat Day the more you watched him ride when you were training horses.
Yeah, because, you know, Pat came out to California to ride the meet at Santa Anita. And I think he was like 1/94 or something. It was just he had a terrible run of luck. He wasn't getting the best mounts. I mean, we're seeing this today with Rajiv Miraj, who's a fantastic jockey. He hasn't had the career Pat Day has had, but he's a lot younger, you know, has fewer racing days under his belt than Pat did. But You know, it took him a while. The California trainers, they're kind of on an island out there, you know, they're used to the people that ride in California, and they kind of gravitate to those people. So it's hard to go into California and do well right off the bat. I mean, even Gary Stevens, when he came there,
yeah,
you know, had a rough go at first, but Pat had a terrible time. I think he won one race on Proud Birdie, the whole meet. And then when I moved to Kentucky and I got to see Pat Day ride every day, I began to appreciate how good of a rider he was and his talents. And then one thing I always loved about him was he was very honest when he came back. And I asked him about a race one time. He said, "Jude, I couldn't have ridden that horse any worse."
All right. Well, he's going to kick off a busy second half of the program for us. That's next, right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Derby and Triple Crown.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gunrunner reaching for the wire, collected alongside, and then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Arrogator's getting going late now. Collected is in front. Arrogate closing on the outside. It's a Bob Baffert 1-2, but Collected going to win it. Collected and Martin Garcia won the Pacific Classic.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum. Presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
But Arrogate swoops up on the outside. America's King Croesus of horse racing went to the front. 200 meters left to go. Arrogate has drawn away from Gunrunner.
Always Dreaming with a 2.5 length lead at 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway, Classic Empire. They're coming to the line, and the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four. We are coming to you from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you with us on this St. Patrick's Day edition of the program. And coming up in just a minute or so, we're going to be joined by Hall of Fame jockey Pat Day. I figured no better way to celebrate St. Patty's Day than with Pat Day, and we're going to look back on his 5 victories in Turfway's signature prep race. We'll also talk to him about crossing the finish line first aboard Little E.T. in the Kentucky Derby. I know that's a memory that Pat will never forget. We'll talk to him about that coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to also be joined by Mike Nyman, who is the Director of Marketing at Gulfstream. He'll be with us right around 9:25 Eastern this morning. And then at the end of the show, Al Stahl Jr. will look back on the life and the career to help us remember Tom Benson, who passed away due to complications of the flu at the age of 90 earlier this week. And we'll get a chance to visit with Al Stahl coming up later on, JT.
Yeah, Al, very close to the Bensons, and he's a good man. It'll be interesting to talk to him.
All right, well, a couple of prep races on the docket this afternoon. You have the Jeff Ruby Stakes, the newly named Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway. You have the Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn. And then you have a big one down at Gulfstream, the Grade 2 Inside Information Stakes, which is obviously not a Derby prep, but it is for the fillies and mares. And we're going to have coverage of that race for you as part of our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series here on the network. Coverage begins 5 o'clock Eastern. You can stream us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Well, Pat Day is indeed with us now, and the man who won so many big races in his career, more than 8,800 career victories, and he owns the record for 5 victories in Turfway's signature Derby prep. I think back then, Pat, it was probably known as the Jim Beam Stakes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was a Jim Beam, and then it was a spiral, I think, the last time we won it on Little E.T.
You know, I found it fascinating.
I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I found it fascinating when I was looking back through and looking at some of the horses that you were aboard in that race. And your first win in the race came aboard at the Threshold, and then you came back with your final win in the race aboard Little E.T., who was a son of At the Threshold. So it all kind of came full circle for you.
Yeah, that was and both trained by Lynn Whiting. You know, we had some good success up there, had some fun times.
Yeah, Lynn Whiting, what a nice man, huh? A very good trainer.
Well, a great trainer. He a great caretaker, knew his horses well. And whenever I rode for him, whenever he legged me up, I rode with the utmost confidence, knowing that the horse was ready for a big effort. You know, obviously the question was, are they good enough to get the job done? But I was never in any doubt that they were ready for a big effort.
Pat, I'm going to walk through the names of your five winners in that race, and just tell me the first thing that comes to mind. At the Threshold.
At the Threshold. If I remember correctly, we'd won the two-year-old race in New York the fall before, which was my first opportunity to ride him, and was pretty keen on him. And it was a big race, as I recall, at Turfway. I had a number of opportunities that year, and subsequently I did not ride him in the Derby. I think Eddie Maple might have rode him in the Derby, and I, if not mistaken, I think he ran third.
Yeah,
in the Kentucky Derby that year.
Yeah, I think you're right. You came back in 1987 with another horse trained by Lynn Whiting, and that was JT's Pet. What do you remember about JT's Pet?
Big, nice-looking colt, and got the job done quite handily that day, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I remember JT's Pet because those are my initials. I remember that race. I think I probably had a couple bucks on you that day.
That should stick in your mind.
Yeah. I know you won't forget the next two, Pat. They were back-to-back, 1989 and 1990. Harvey Veneer legged you up aboard Western Playboy in 1989, and then Neil Howard gave you the mount on Summer Squall in 1990. Tell me about those two horses.
Well, Western Playboy, of course, was a colt by Playfellow, and we'd been fortunate enough to win the Travers on Playfellow for Harvey several years previous to that. So it was, and Western Playboy, of course, was an Illinois bred. So for him to win that race was pretty remarkable. Harvey was another great horseman and a fun time. Summer Squall, that was his first effort around two turns in. It was his effort in the race that afternoon that convinced me that he was the one that I wanted to ride in the Kentucky Derby. We'd been riding unbridled. We won the Florida Derby on him, and I'd asked Carl if he would wait until after the Turfway race with Summer Squall before I made a decision, and he was. He was comfortable with that, so after a very, very fine performance in the Turfway race, we opted to ride Summer Squall. We come back and rode him in the Bluegrass and, of course, won that. I believe Unbridled might have been third in the Bluegrass, and then, of course, Unbridled come back and won the Derby, and we were second. So,
yeah, I always thought Summer Squall was a little bit of an underrated horse just in general. And now I know that's true, because if you picked him over Unbridled, that says a lot about the quality of Summer Squall.
Well, you know, he was probably as courageous a horse as I've ever ridden. As a 2-year-old in Hopeful in New York, we went into a seam coming off the turn, and they closed up the hole on him and bounced him around, and I just threw his head away. I said, you know, if you want to back out of here, you back out. If you want to go on, you go on. And the little horse put his head down, pinned his ears, and just fought. And it was the funniest thing, because then once we got on through, and fortunately we went on and won the race, but once we got through the traffic jam, got, you know, when all the bouncing was done, he just threw his head up and pricked his ears like, wow, that was fun. And, you know, actually relished being down in, you know, we're in tight in competition. And the Derby that afternoon, I couldn't have asked him to be moving, you know, in a Kentucky Derby. I couldn't have asked him to be moving any better. You know, was moving nice. worked his way up through the field and actually inherited the lead coming off the turn, coming to the top of the stretch. And at that point, as easy as he was moving, the thought crossed my mind, it's not a matter of win or lose. It's just up to me when I want to step on the accelerator and how far I want to win by. And about that time, he gave me just a slight, like a stutter step, I call it. It wasn't even visible to the naked eye, but I felt it, just kind of a little, just a momentary split-second hesitation. And about that time, unbridled went by us. And from there to the wire, he was in the bridle, off the bridle, in the bridle, off the bridle. And I just, that was just so unlike him. And then, of course, pulling up, he didn't want to stop. I had to get the outrider to catch me. It wasn't like he'd put it all on the line for me. I went back and watched the rerun that afternoon, and watched the rerun that evening, and of course I was watching the rerun and listening to the call, and at the point where he threw his head up, or he didn't really throw his head up, but he gave me the stutter step. Mike Battaglia had said, and it's Summer Squall in front, and even over Terry's call, you could hear the crowd roar. And I really believe at that moment in time, it kind of took Summer Squall's attention, just broke his attention for a second, and he was never able to get his head back in the game completely. In an effort to explain that to reporters coming into the Preakness, I said, you know, it's almost as if you're sitting there and you've got your headphones on and you're listening to some music or something in the background, and you're in the process of writing your article, and somebody sneaks up and runs the volume up on you real loud, and then they turn it down immediately. How long does it take you to get your thought process back? Because that's basically what happened. We come off the turn, 150,000 people went through the roof, and the volume never went down. And so he would get in the bridle, and then he was like looking around and getting back in the bridle and looking around. So when it comes to the Preakness, I kept him down inside in the midst of the battle, and we give it to unbridled. So going in, I thought I was on the best horse. I still believe I was on the best horse. Albeit we didn't win the Derby that day.
Yeah, Pat Day with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pat, Summer Squall was the third consecutive year that you would end up second in the Kentucky Derby. You had 49er in 88, you had Easy Goer in 99, and then Summer Squall. That had to be extremely frustrating to rattle off three consecutive seconds. What was that like for you?
Well, you know what? If it would have been BC, and I say BC before Christ, before January of 84, when I accepted Christ into my heart and had that stabilizing factor in my life, it probably would have been extremely frustrating. But I had fallen in love with the Word of God. I started standing on the promises of God, and there was one scripture that was my go-to scripture. It was Romans 8:28, and it simply says that we know that in all things. And in my Bible, I've got that word all circled. In all things, God works together for the good of those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. And really, that eliminated the fear of failure, and it enabled me to accept the outcome of the race graciously, whether I was a winning or losing. I wanted to be a humble winner or a gracious loser. And so coming into with 49er, I knew he'd run a big race, winning colors. I tell you the truth, when I come off the turn, I thought I was going to run right by her. I put on 49er to the task, and he dropped down and accelerated, made a big run up to her, and then she was just really game. She was a great filly, and she fought me off, and she won by a diminishing neck. And then Easy Goer, we caught a track that he just didn't like. He never untracked himself. As you might recall, he got beat as a two-year-old the fall before in the Breeders' Cup.
Yep.
Just it never got out of second gear, and so I come back after the race, and I was comfortable. I mean, I knew he didn't handle the track, he didn't give me his best effort, and you know, and hats off to Sunday Silence, but we didn't run our race. And then of course Summer Squall, and I just told you going in and coming out, I still felt like I was on the best horse, But I was fortunate enough that day. I got back in the jocks room, and you might recall the race. The TVs had a camera on Carl Nasker and Mrs. Ginter in the box, and Carl's calling the race for her. And at the end of the race, he said, "Mrs. Ginter, you won the Derby. I love you." And he gave her a big hug. I got back in the jocks room in time to watch that, and I started crying. It was tears of joy for Mrs. Ginter. She's 92 or 93, been in the business for 100 years, and had never won the Derby. I was happy for her. I was sad for Summer Squall and the connections, but I knew he hadn't put forth his best efforts. So, I mean, I didn't know, but I knew he pulled up fine, and we would live to fight another day. So it could have and would have been extremely frustrating if I didn't have a firm belief in the Lord and in the promises of God, whereby all things work together for the good of those who love him and who are called according to his purpose.
Well, Pat, talk about finally being able to break through in 1992 with Longshot Little E.T. The moment you crossed that finish line beneath the Twin Spires and got to experience that feeling, take me back to that moment.
Oh, I've given a lot of thought to that moment in time, trying to come up with the right words that would adequately and clearly express that to whoever would be listening. There's only one word, indescribable. It's something that I think that until you experience it, you can't really get the feel for it. And it was. It was having run second several times and participated nine times previous to that. I thought I had an idea what the feeling would be like, but it was surreal. It was over the top. It was. I was talking with a group yesterday, and I told them that was 32 years of riding, over 8,800 victories, and other races that were worth more monetarily. They paled in comparison to the pure joy of just winning the race. It was the absolute highlight of my racing career, and couldn't have been happier to have done it for Mr. Partee and my good friend Lynn Whiting. It would have been a joy, don't get me wrong, to have won it for any of the previous connections or those that I rode for thereafter, but to win it, that afternoon with Mr. Partee and Mr. Whiting, it was certainly extra special.
Now, what an amazing trip down memory lane with Hall of Fame jockey Pat Day on the program this morning. Pat, you're always very gracious with your time. Really do appreciate it, my friend. And thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us this morning, looking back on those moments. All the best, my friend. We'll look forward to catching up soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me on. A very happy and safe St. Patrick's Day to one and all. And again, thank you for having me on. God bless you all.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Pat Day with us here on HRRN on this St. Patrick's Day edition. How cool was that? That's the one thing you and I talk about a lot, Jude. These great riders, you talk to any of them, and you ask them about a certain horse or a certain race, and they can take you back to that moment and put you in the saddle with them and explain every detail of what they were feeling underneath them. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We hear it from trainers, too. We always talk about Shug and how he remembers how he trained every horse. He'll tell you, "No, I don't remember how I trained every horse, but I know some of them." those are things, I think those moments are things that you just don't forget, especially, the top riders, the guys in the Hall of Fame, they're riding, in rarefied air. And they remember the little things that they did that made the difference. And it's really interesting to listen to.
Yeah, just wonderful stuff from Pat Day. If you missed any portion of that interview or any of our interviews from the program so far this morning, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. We'll get to a break. We'll come back. Your Blood Horse News update is on the other side of this, as is Mike Nyman, Director of Marketing at Gulfstream. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-mesh keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a B-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake B-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Presented by Red Brand, manufacturer of Keepsake B-mesh and non-climb horse fence, trusted by farms and veterinarians worldwide.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
Our main event Saturday is the Grade 1 $400,000 Santa Margarita for older fillies and mares at a mile and one-eighth. We've also got the $200,000 Pasadena Stakes and our traditional St. Patrick's Day feature, the $100,000 Irish O'Brien. Fans, don't forget, we now have regular first post time on Saturday of 12 noon and early first post each Sunday at 11:30 a.m. As always, we guarantee $500,000 in the late pick four and a revamped wagering menu that includes $2 win, place, and show parlay wagers and 50-cent trifectas. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
It will be Enticed, sharp in victory, and wrapped up by Junior Alvarado as they stroll home in the Gotham.
Baldoro in a spine-tingling spectacle at the Great Race Place.
Enticed and Baldoro capped a huge weekend for Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, with Enticed taking another step toward the Kentucky Derby with a big win in the Grade 3 Gotham at Aqueduct, earning a 95 buyer. And Baldoro returning to win his three-year-old debut in the Grade 2 San Felipe at Santa Anita, recording a buyer of 101. Those winning efforts make Enticed and Baldoro your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro was North America's leading sire by Grade 1 winners last year with 7. And no stallion can top Medaglia d'Oro's two greatest stakes winning three-year-olds in 2018. While only Darley Stallion Street Sense can match it. To learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
With a quarter of a mile left to go, Moonlit Promise issues the challenge to Spice Lady. Bodacious Babe cuts the corner and tries to run with them down the outside in Curlin's approval. A late run from long shot Jordan's Henny. Final eighth of a mile, still many chances. Curlin's approval has the lead. Jordan's Henny trying to get out. If she does, she's dangerous. And here she comes. Jordan's Henny and Tyler Gaffleone surging up to win the Hurricane Birdie. Jordan's Henny gets it. Second was Curlin's approval. Third was Rich Mommy. Then Moonlit Promise. It's a 50-1. Shocker to kick off the late pick four.
Pete Aiello bringing them home. That was the Hurricane Birdie Stakes and a massive upset by Jordan's Penny, who returns this afternoon in the Grade 2 Inside Information Stakes at Gulfstream Park. Of course, we will have exclusive coverage of that race for you right here on the network as part of our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series. Coverage begins 5 o'clock Eastern. Make sure you're tuned in worldwide, horseracingradio.net. Mike Nyman from Gulfstream is going to be with us momentarily right after your Blood Horse news update and a look at the top headlines from bloodhorse.com. Well, sad news here. We touched on this at the top of the program. Prominent owner Tom Benson has died. Tom Benson, a Louisiana sports icon who took his football and basketball with a healthy side of horse racing. He died March 15th. At Ochsner Medical Center in Jefferson, Louisiana, with his wife Gail Marie Benson at his side. He was 90 and was hospitalized with the flu on February 16th. For all his success as owner of the New Orleans Saints and New Orleans Pelicans, including the Saints' Super Bowl victory and a plaque in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, there was one sports trophy the Louisiana native joked he might not want to claim. As much as he loved thoroughbreds, as a savvy businessman, Benson recognized how horses can pull you in. And for more on that story, you can head over to bloodhorse.com. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Al Stahl Jr. to help look back and remember Tom Benson. Well, don't miss any of the Road to the Kentucky Derby prep races and through the Triple Crown race coverage like only Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet can bring you. Plus, right now, you can sign up for the Blood Horse Triple Crown Special, which is 12 weekly issues for only $12. That's right. Great deal. Go to bloodhorse.com/TC to sign up now. Well, Mike Nyman is at Gulfstream Park in South Florida. That is where they will contest the Grade 2 Inside Information Stakes later today as the championship meet rolls on and moves closer to the Florida Derby. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. How's everything going up there?
Everything is good, although we'd like to be in South Florida where it's probably a little warmer.
And it's a picture-perfect day. It's going to be another fast and firm day here today, and weather's going to be in the 70s.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have to rub it in. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, what are you more excited about, the Inside Information Stakes or the victory by your Florida Gators in the first round?
Oh, the Gators. Come on. That's an easy one for me.
A good matchup in the second round for them or what?
Well, they're playing, Texas Tech, I think, which are one of the Texases. And it's almost like a home game for those guys. But the Gators played really well Thursday night in the first round. They kind of started a little, they came out of the gate very fast. And in a lot of games, it's kind of typical. They go into like a 3 or 4 minute funk. So the score was 25-21 at the half, but they ended up coming out in the second half and putting St. Bonnie away very quickly. And when the game going away, they ended up scoring, I think, about 50 points in the second half. So they're looking good.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying the SEC was the top conference in the country this year. Among the top conferences, they were 4-0 Thursday to kick things off.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Eight teams made the tournament, and that's the first time that's ever happened. They were mentioning it for the last month, and I hadn't really realized it myself, though. All those crazy numbers they use today, the BPI, RPI, and all that, they were saying that the SEC was the strongest. But if you look at through the conference, especially like Florida, we had an amazing out-of-conference schedule. We played, Clemson and Duke and Gonzaga. We played a lot of good teams, before the SEC season even started. So I think that really helps out quite a bit and gets you ready for the tournament and you know that you can stack up with the better teams.
Our version of Dickie V., Mike Nyman joining us from Gulfstream Park. I'm telling you, the guy can talk college sports as well as anybody. He can also talk horse racing. And, Mike, a good one coming up this afternoon, the Grade 2 Inside Information Stakes. And the queen of the division, Forever Unbridled, is heading to Dubai. But what a contentious group you have here.
Yeah, it's a great group of horses. There'll be seven going postward here, going seven furlongs, seven going seven. It's the 40th running of the Inside Information, which is a Grade 2 stake, and it carries a $200,000 purse with fillies and mares four and up. And as you had just played Pete's call in the Here Comes the Bride, where Jordan's Henny won there at 59-1, some number like that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of looking today. In these kind of races, I always like to look for a stalker, somebody not always that has to be right on the front, but who could sit second or third. So the horse I'm going with is Rich Mommy and Irad Ortiz, who's been having an amazing meet here. You just mentioned Ortiz, and not too much else to say, right? But he's having a super, super meet, and this is the horse I'm going to be looking for.
Yeah, 23% wins at the meeting. That's fabulous. 77 victories in 331 starts. And, of course, he's riding for Victor Barbosa, who has really caught fire in the last year. He's really been training in good luck, so there's lots to like about Rich Mommy. We had her rejoin clip on earlier, but it's a contentious race. You got Moonlit Promise, who's been competing against some of the best fillies in the country, and Ivy Bell and Jordan's Henny we talked about. So I mean, it's a deep field.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, when you mention Moonlit Promise and I look at the jockey, Gary Boulanger, it just, I always get such great feelings that Gary is such a great guy. I've known Gary a long time, actually rode horses of mine. And the way that he's come back from just a catastrophic injury, and it was here at Gulfstream, and that the guy is even out riding today and how successful he's been up at Woodbine is just an amazing testament to him. And I just wanted to mention that Gary's just a super guy.
Yeah, of course, that inside information comes up this afternoon on the network beginning 5 o'clock Eastern, post time 5:04, but likely to go a bit past that down in South Florida this afternoon. So we'll have that coverage for you, 5 o'clock Eastern. Mike, that gets brought up to us quite often, and I've brought it up to you before, that the little bit of a drag on post times at Gulfstream Park, and you'll look at me and say, you know what? Not my department.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Exactly right.
But, it's the Ritvo shuffle, not the Nyman shuffle.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, they're trying to do things, you know, that try to work off with other major tracks with their post times and trying not to run on other, you know, New York and Santa Anita and some others. So, you know, I get it, you know, that people have an issue with it, but, you know, everybody's kind of knows what's going on with that, and it's not like they're holding the horses behind the gate. They're bringing them up to the gate when they're ready to run. Though last week, it was getting dark here at the end of the day in the last race, and they had to rush the race, so as soon as the clock hit zero, they were already loading. So a little bit different dynamic there, but, yep, it's, you know, I think when, you know, people understand, you know, what's kind of going on, we're trying to do things for the fans and make it more amenable. I used to, when I first was here, people were complaining, you're Gulfstream and New York are running at the same time, and obviously I get that, and so I think they're trying to make an effort. I know there's a lot of conversations going on, and you mentioned Tim Ritvo, that with the other major racetracks about setting up post times and schedules and to just to make it more accessible and more fan-friendly.
Yeah, well, I always tell people, you know, it's not etched on stone tablets, the post time. They're just merely suggestions.
There you go. I might start using that.
You're welcome to use it.
It'll be in the new ad campaign. Mike, speaking of doing things for the fans, and you are always thinking about the fans and trying to find a way to make their experience at Gulfstream more enjoyable, you're going to offer my favorite giveaway of the entire meet coming up on Saturday afternoon. Later today, you'll have the jockey poster giveaway, and people will get a chance to meet the jockeys.
Right, so that's going to start at around 10:30 in the walking ring. So just come on down. It goes on for an hour, so I suggest you get there early. And with the first race starting at 12, so it's a good time to get in. We have the poster is free, and you get online, and the jockeys will be all set up at a table in the walking ring. You come by and get to say hello and get each one to sign your poster. If you don't get here by 11:30, then we'll have posters in the breezeway we'll be giving away free, but those will be unsigned. So if you really, you know, you're a big fan, get out here early, and you have a chance to go ahead and get a poster. And, of course, it's St. Patrick's Day. I don't have to mention that. And we do our leprechaun loot giveaway, which is a winner. Everybody gets to pick out of the big loot bag, and everybody's a winner. And with the top prize is going to be a $1,500 bet on, I believe, on the inside information. So definitely you want to be here for that, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And, of course, our food and beverage will have all the green beer and all the corned beef and cabbage and all the specialties that people love on St. Patrick's Day. And then if you stay after racing at the Village, they're doing a $2 beer crawl, which goes from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., and that's in participation with 8 restaurants in the Village here.
Wow, and also live entertainment. I was reading about some of the bands. There'll be live entertainment and giveaways in the Champions Plaza, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all kinds of things to look forward to. That whole St. Patrick's Day promotion with the, what'd you call it, Mike? The leprechaun?
Loot. Leprechaun loot. L-O-O-T. Yep.
Loot. Yeah. We might be able to cast Jockey James Graham as the spokesperson for that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They call him Lucky Charm. That's his nickname in the jocks room.
Lucky
Charm.
And you can see why. He looks like the little guy that hawks the Lucky Charms.
He does. Well, Mike, what do you want people to know when they're looking ahead over the next couple of weeks, edging closer to the Florida Derby? What do you want them to know about Gulfstream Park and some things that are coming up?
Well, kind of give you a little idea of what's happening this weekend. Then next weekend, next Saturday, which is the 24th, the week before the Florida Derby, we have our PDJF day here, which, I'm sorry, we have our track day here. which is our Thoroughbred Retirement Aftercare, and that's a big charity that we have here to take care of horses that after they retire or they're abandoned, whatever, we take care of them and put them in a good home and make sure that they're well taken care of. We have a horse that will be out here that day called Valid, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with, that ended up in horse rescue that had won stake races. And he will be here at our breakfast, which is going to kick off at 8 o'clock that day. So you definitely want to get out here early. And we're going to have all kinds of cool things, like we're going to have dachshund racing here that day, dog racing. That's going to start at 11 o'clock in the morning and go till about 1:30. So we'll have that going on in between the races. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. And it's just for a great cause, a great charity. And you can go on our website and you can read all about it and everything that's happening with that. And then, of course, the week after will be the Florida Derby. We'll be kicking off the first race that day, just so everybody knows, at 11:30. And I want to mention for your listeners, because before we're going to put this out next week, I'm going to give you all a little head start. If the Rainbow Six has not been hit by the Florida Derby, the mandatory day will be Florida Derby Day. A lot of people said to me, well, why isn't it the day after? Well, as you know, in Kentucky and in New York, on Easter Sunday, there's no gambling, so we're going to do that to take care of the fans and do it on Florida Derby Day. So if it reaches that day and it's not jackpot is not won, you're probably looking at something north of $20 million.
Wow, how yeah, great so, will that day be?
Yeah,
I mean that's going to be incredible. That's just going to be sensational if that all comes together.
Yeah, that's going to, it'll obviously, if that happens, it'll set all kinds of records for the Florida Derby and for Gulfstream. So, we're looking forward to that, obviously. And, but people keep on playing because you never know. A lot of people, say, oh, I'll wait till the mandatory, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there will be a mandatory day, because if it's won before and it happens, then you may be missing out. So there's almost $4 million in the jackpot there now, and we've had many days here where there's been singles in the races. As a matter of fact, there was a day here the other day. I think there was a 7-horse field in the last race where there was 3 singles, and all the horses were 9-1 or less. So there's always an opportunity, to win, take a shot to try to take the whole jackpot down. If that doesn't happen on Florida Derby Day, you'll have a chance that day. There'll be 14 races, and again, we'll be kicking it off at 11:30. And then on Easter Sunday will be the closing day of the championship meet, April 1st. And we do a giveaway that day, which will be a personal picnic table, which is a really nice item that we'll be doing on that closing day. But, of course, we ratchet it up 4 days later on Thursday, and we start our spring-summer meet, which will be running starting off 4 days a week in April, Thursday through Sunday, and then we run right through the end of September.
Yeah, always giving thought to the fans and giving back to the fans who support them. That's Mike Nyman, Director of Marketing at Gulfstream Park. Make sure you say hello when you make it to South Florida, and he'll give you a little tour and take you around and show you the ins and outs of Gulfstream. Mike, appreciate the visit. We'll look forward to catching up next week, my friend.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
All right. Mike Nyman with us here on HRN. We'll get to a quick break. When we come back, we will be joined by Al Stahl Jr. to look back on the life of New Orleans Saints and Pelicans owner, and of course, racehorse owner, Tom Benson. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Jimmy John's Freaky Fast, Freaky Fresh.
I'm calling because I saw one of your delivery persons today, and he was totally naked.
Ma'am, I sincerely want to apologize for any...
Fuck naked right there on the street.
Ma'am, we're doing all we can to...
And I say it's about darn time.
I know, and I'm gonna... Wait, what?
The human body is a beautiful thing, don't you agree?
Well, I...
We've suffered the tyranny of clothing for way too long.
Okay, but...
So thanks, Jimmy John's, for going all natural.
Actually, ma'am, it's our meats that are all natural.
Say what now?
Our meats are all natural. Wood smoked ham, choice roast beef, real fresh turkey breast, all natural and freaky fresh.
So I don't suppose I can expect all natural delivery in the future?
No.
Darn.
Order Jimmy John's sandwich delivery today. Jimmy John's, where fresh and fast meat.
Castleton Lions is home to blue blood sprinter Justin Philipp and multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti. Justin Philipp was North America's number one ranked second crop sire by earnings in January of 2018. Represented this year by exciting stakes place three-year-olds Upset Brewing and Blushing Justine, along with Riano Tesoro. Now 3-for-4 lifetime after taking the 36 million yen Crocus Stakes at Tokyo Racecourse on January 27th. Justin Philipp is also the sire of What a Catch, winner of last year's Rockville Center Stakes at 2. Seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance. The sire of Eclipse champion and Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong
has won.
Canadian Classic hero Sir Dudley Diggs
has won the Queen's Plate.
And marathon specialist Runtime.
But Runtime, motors on the outside.
Justin Philipp and Gio Ponti standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
And they're off.
Join HRRN for Saturdays at Gulfstream. Every Saturday during Gulfstream Park's championship meet, we'll bring you live racing coverage of Gulfstream's biggest stakes races, complete with expert analysis from our award-winning staff. This week's featured race is the Inside Information Stakes, Saturdays at Gulfstream, exclusively on HRRN. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
After a 44.5-mile Fish Trap Road has taken the lead. It is Fish Trap Road in front coming to the eighth pole. Star Hill second on the outside and closing in. Sharp Aztec is down toward the rail, then Tail is the ball. Tom's Ready running on for the back of the pack, weaving through traffic. It is Fish Trap Road. Tom's Ready on the inside is coming on through from dead last to first. Tom's Ready and the Woody Stevens. He beat Fish Trap Road, then Star Hill, and Sharp Azteca in a final time of 1 minute, 21.38 seconds.
Larry Colmus with the call. Tom's Ready getting the victory in the Woody Stevens for GMB Racing of Tom and Gail Benson. Sadly, Tom Benson succumbing to the effects of the flu at the age of 90 this past week, and he leaves us, and he leaves the New Orleans Saints, the New Orleans Pelicans, and a huge void in the world of thoroughbred racing, and nobody knows that better than trainer Al Stahl Jr., who is a native of New Orleans and got to know the Bensons quite well over the years. Al, welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike and Jude.
Yeah, first of all, my condolences. I know you were close with the Bensons, and some very sad news coming out. I wish this was under better circumstances, but let me tell you something. I had the chance to interview Gail at the Kentucky Derby a couple of years ago, and what a sweetheart she was. And you could tell that that bond with her and Tom was something special, and I think the racing industry experienced that too.
Oh, yeah, they were inseparable. There's no question about it. I mean, once they met and went out and courted and got married, if you look at all the pictures and everything that's been on in the media the past not even 24 hours, they're always together, and that's the way they were. I mean, every time they came to the races, they were together, Pelicans game, Saints camp, everywhere. So that was a legitimate love story.
And I read that Mrs. Benson's going to take over the teams, and I assume the horses. I think she really loves the racing game.
Oh, yeah. Well, GMB is already set up in her name, Gail Marie Benson, so there's nothing that needs to be changed there. And I wouldn't think there'll be a sale or the farm in Paris out there, or Georgetown, I guess, you know, would, you know, all that would just stay the same. But they've got babies and mare still in foal, and I think everything would just keep going forward. So, you know, Mr. Benson, you don't get to be worth a couple billion dollars by not preparing for things like that. And, you know, she seamlessly transitioned to the owner of the Saints. That's already been done. The NFL's reported that. The NBA's reported that she's owner and approved for the Pelicans. So, you know, he had his ducks in a row, so to speak, and the horse was the same way.
Well, with
no, go ahead, JT.
With you know, when you're in New Orleans, they talk about the Holy Trinity, right? And that's onions and peppers and celery. And but you guys, you got Dallas Stewart, Tom Amos, and Al Stahl. So you guys are gonna, you know, have to help Mrs. Benson along, and three better guys you couldn't find.
Oh no, we're glad to help. We just hope the horses cooperate. After such a good start, things got a little quiet, and I know. We have a Tom Zay Todd who's on the comeback trail after showing a ton of promise last summer. And Dallas has a nice maiden coming up that he likes, Cathedral Reader, named after Gail Benson, where they met in St. Louis Cathedral when she was actually a reader. And he was in a pew and said, I want to meet that lady. and I'm sure Tom's got something up his sleeve. Oh, Tom's got Lone Sailor for Louisiana Derby. What a story that would be. We enter tomorrow for next Saturday, the 24th, and that would be something else, but he's a live horse in the Louisiana Derby, or a live long shot, I should say.
Talking with trainer Al Stahl Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Al, what did Tom Benson mean to horse racing and to New Orleans?
Well, people don't realize that Tom Benson has been involved in horse racing for 40-plus years. He had horses. He always had a ranch in Texas, and Billy Fox, Tammy Fox's dad, was his trainer. And he had some horses that ran and won stakes, and he had a nice little stable here when Billy was training. And then when he got away from it and went about making more money and doing whatever he was doing to make himself who he was, he decided to come back to racing at a late age. And that's when, you know, us three stepped in, and we couldn't have been luckier. You know, we got the horses mainly because of our New Orleans connections. And I saw something the other night, or last night, saying, Mr. Benson said, I really wasn't interested in helping the New Orleans Saints. I was really helping the city of New Orleans, talking about when he bought the Saints. And, you know, that's a very poignant statement for a guy to whip out $90 million just to help a city that needed a team to keep them going. So it turned out to be a $2 billion profit for him, but at that time he didn't know that. But I thought that was a pretty strong statement to how he felt about the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, and he was always like that with everything. I mean, the city was so important to him. It seemed like it always came first.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, he bought, just recently, this past summer, he bought Dixie Brewery, which is anybody from New Orleans, basically, who's in middle age like we are, you know, grew up with Dixie Beer. And, you know, the box stores, the big brands, kind of, it was a local brewery that got kind of squeezed out. And Mr. Benson said, you know, I knew that beer from my whole life. It was 1907. He bought it this summer, revitalized it, rebranded it, remarketed it, and you see people drinking Dixie beer all around the city. I have no idea how the dollars and cents have worked out, but he brought it back to life just like he did so many things in the city of New Orleans.
Well, Al, in true New Orleans fashion, you had sent me a video just a short time ago. Last night there was a parade that was in Tom Benson's honor, and people will look at that and say, wait a minute, a parade? Isn't this supposed to be a sad time? But New Orleans looks at things a little bit differently.
Well, that's called a second line. And a second line is the traditional thing in New Orleans where people march behind. The first line would be like, say, an organization with a brass band. Last night, that was the Big Six brass band. They literally just didn't get a permit, didn't do anything, just walked out on the street and started marching from the Treme area towards the Superdome, and all the people you saw in that video just filed right in, and they snarled up traffic and nobody minded at all. That was a very typical New Orleans thing for when someone so big passed away, and it was all hoot at this and go Saints and Mr. B and everything. That was New Orleans. That epitomized New Orleans with how we celebrate lives.
Yeah, there's nothing like New Orleans. It's one of the greatest cities on earth, and I always love visiting there. And there are some unusual things, some different things that occur down there that sometimes make people shake their heads. But there's really no better place to be, and I think it's probably the best place to die in the world because they really celebrate your life.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, it's sad, of course. Mr. Benson died, 90 years old, self-made. I mean, that's the definition of a life well lived. And once everybody gets over the initial shock, I think it's just going to be a wonderful thing. They're talking about laying him in state at Gallier Hall, which was the original mayor's office that's been remodeled, and it's a beautiful place. And I'm no telling how many people will line up to come through that if and when that happens later this week. So it'll be a celebration going forward, and it's a sad thing, but also he's going away, but his thumbprint is going to stay on the city of New Orleans for a long, long time, and the city of New Orleans needs him a whole lot.
Yeah, very well said. He's Al Stahl Jr. with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Al, really appreciate you spending a little time with us here this morning, looking back on the life of a great man and somebody who was so good to horse racing. Thank you so much, my friend, and we'll look forward to catching up soon. And again, our sincere condolences.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
All right. Al Stahl here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom Benson passed away at the age of 90. Well, it's time now for our monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon, located right here in the heart of horse country in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. And you know, since 1888, think about that, Four Roses has been made with the same passion and handcrafted as only they can. And this interview, much like the iconic bourbon, handcrafted by Four Roses. Since 1888, Four Roses Bourbon has been made with the same passion and handcrafted as only they can. And this interview, much like that great bourbon, handcrafted by Four Roses. Joined by Al Young, who is the senior brand ambassador at Four Roses here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Al, talk to me a little bit about what makes Four Roses so unique.
Well, you know, the uniqueness of Four Roses can be defined as a high-quality grain source. People we've been dealing with for the past 60 years. We have two mash bills, which are grain menus, and we have single-story warehouses where we age our distillate and turn it into a really yummy-tasting bourbon. And then we have five proprietary yeast strains.
For the layman that doesn't know much about bourbon, what does that mean?
Well, that means that we're using a grain mash bill of one that's 75% corn, 20% rye, and 5% malted barley, and the other one is 60% corn, 35% rye, and 5% malted barley.
And then at the end of the process, you'll actually take these different combinations and then mix them together to get the different flavors that you're
That's exactly right. Yes, we have five yeasts. One produces a delicate fruitiness, another a slightly spicy character, a rich fruitiness in the third one. The fourth one's sort of like a floral essence. Rose is my favorite. And, of course, the last one has sort of an herbal quality to it. Sort of like spearmint, if you will.
No other bourbon company uses all of these different yeasts, correct?
That's correct. They're all proprietary.
All right. And then the recipes are all proprietary, too, I would imagine?
They are.
FourRosesBourbon.com is the website. You can learn more about all of the mash bills that we're talking about, the two different mash bills, and, of course, about the five different yeasts, which, of course, end up giving you 10 different recipes with the two mash bills. Am I saying that correctly?
Exactly right.
And the different flavors that you can get are all listed on the website as well. You mentioned your favorite, the roses. How come?
Well, I just think that there's a really nice aroma that comes out of the bourbon if it has sort of a floral content to it. It kind of speaks mellowness, but it also speaks ingenuity and creativity that you can't find anywhere else.
Is there a proper way to enjoy bourbon?
You know, I've heard that all across the country as I do travel around quite a bit. I've heard some say they like it over a cube of ice. I've heard they like it straight up. Some like it in mixed drinks. And my way of thinking, as long as you drink it, it doesn't matter how you do it.
When you look at the FourRosesBourbon.com website, you'll see the different recipes that we're talking about, and you'll see the different combinations that create these different flavors. So when somebody's looking at these different things on the website, explain that. Tell me what they're looking at and how they can interpret all of that.
Well, now, if you look at it directly, you'll see that there are about four letters involved. And the first letter is O, which stands for Old Prentice, which is what our distillery was called at one time when we were owned by Seagram's. The second letter will be either a B for a high rye or an E for a high corn mash bill or grain menu. The third letter will be S for simple distillation, which involves a still and a doubler. And then the last letter will be one of those five yeast codes. So if you take a look at our single barrel, for example, it says it's an OBSV letter arrangement. Well, mm-hmm. That simply means it's a high rye mash bill with a fruity yeast.
Okay. So this is the way that people can determine the flavor that they're going to get when they sample a particular bottle of Four Roses.
It gives you an indicator because once you open that bottle and start drinking the bourbon, your interpretation of what it is might be more pronounced, might be even different. You never know.
I know many people will enjoy bourbon with a cigar, too.
Yes.
That's a very popular thing to do. Are there recommendations that Four Roses tends to make as to what pairs well, kind of like a wine? Is there a cigar that pairs well with a certain bourbon or things like that?
Oh, I don't want to step on any toes with that. Cubano is probably the way to go with some of the more richness of the single barrel. Small batch will go with just about any medium quality cigar. And then the Four Roses bourbon at 80 proof just takes it all on. It'll go with all of them.
He is Al Young. He is the senior brand ambassador for Four Roses. You can learn more about the brand and about the different recipes we've discussed by going to fourrosesbourbon.com. And we're back to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gulfstream's championship meet is in full stride with top class racing now through April 1st. Visit GulfstreamPark.com today to reserve your seats for the $1 million Express Bet Florida Derby on Saturday, March 31st, when many of the nation's top three-year-olds look to take one final step toward the Run for the Roses. And every day during the championship meet, you can take your shot at a life-changing score by playing the Rainbow Six. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com or download the Gulfstream Park app on your mobile device.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
This successful son of AP Indy has sired six millionaires, including 2017 Eclipse champion three-year-old West Coast. A dominant winner of the Grade 1 Travers and Pennsylvania Derby, West Coast also placed in the Breeders' Cup Classic and was runner-up in the $16 million Pegasus World Cup. In the sales ring, Juveniles by Flatter brought up to $600,000, and his yearlings sold up to $460,000. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
It's Snapper Sinclair game. He's reaching for the line. It's Snapper Sinclair to do it.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Power. And Tapazar, a sterling performance today. Tapazar and Corey Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Passion.
And it's American Pastime in a very, very impressive effort today.
Performance.
But it's Monomoy Girl and the Rachel Alexandra Stakes. LaRonge Rue and Monomoy Girl, 1-3.
Gainesway Stallion Tapazar is Tappet's leading miler, breaking his maiden by 10.5 lengths as a 2-year-old, wiring the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by 4.5 lengths at 3, and running away with the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4. A top 10 third crop sire, now with more than $3 million in progeny earnings, including Monomoy Girl, who discovered a new racing style while winning the Grade 2 Rachel Alexandra at the fairgrounds. Closing from last, last to blow by the field in the stretch. Monomoy Girl is now being pointed for Keeneland's Grade 1 Ashland. Tapazar, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hi, I'm Kieran McLaughlin. I'm so hot at this meet because I listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
Back on the Equine Forum, you just heard that ad for Tapazar at Gainesway. His two-year-olds at OBS March, very well received. The market has certainly accepted him, selling for $155,000 and $110,000. Two-year-olds by exciting Tapazar at Gainesway. JT, been a fun show, my friend.
Yeah, it went fast.
Yeah, it went by really quickly. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody throughout HRN Nation. Be safe and enjoy the evening as you get set for, no doubt, some college basketball and some fun festivities. Our thanks to Sal Sinatra from the Maryland Jockey Club, Jen Shaw from Dean Dorton, Pat Day, the Hall of Fame jockey, for being with us, Mike Nyman from Gulfstream Park, and Al Stahl Jr., looking back on the life of Tom Benson. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure, and also Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, and check us out on Twitter at HRN. Thanks for listening. For our producers, Lee Delapina and Sean C., for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.